speaker today, and then he kindly accepted to share his experience, his technical and technology and engineering background with mm-hmm. us. And this is the class that we have, as I mentioned to you, our introductory course.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of good motivators.
There's students. A lot of things to play with.
Yeah.
So.
And also, each group is involved with their own project.
Okay.
And you can see some of this project information on the board.
Wind turbine.
Robots, and other projects that they are involved
right.
with. Yeah. So please.
All right. I'll just go ahead and stay up front here.
Sure.
So. Okay. Like I said, my name's Dominic Pruitt. I'm from the Pueblo of Laguna, just down I-40 here. And I talked to your professor here because I recently moved back to Albuquerque. And I moved back because I have two boys right now and a girl on the way, a 4-year-old son, a 2-year-old son, and I wanted to grow up with, you know, the culture that I grew up with here, you know, in Albuquerque, among the Pueblos and things like that. So to help me at least understand where all of you are coming from, can I kind of get your name and where you're why you're here? What kind of spurred you into this is an introductory engineering course.
Right.
So it just helps me get perspective from the group here that I can better relay some of the information that I know. So
that's great. So would you please introduce yourself, your tribal affiliation, and your program of study, and a little bit about yourself and your future plans. So this is the back here on to our speech.
Start from the back.
Yeah. Would you please,
Jocelyn? Hello, my name is Jocelyn Begay. I'm a member of the Navajo Nation, and you're basically in this introduction course to get a grip on what engineering is.
Okay.
And so far, like...
All right. Very good, Jocelyn. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Cody Brown. Same thing, Navajo.
Okay.
And I came here for an intro engineering to figure out what I want to go into.
Okay.
My name is John Farajud, Choctaw member, and I'm doing networking here.
Okay.
Into computers and stuff.
Great.
I'm Craig, I'm Navajo, and I'm just taking this course just because, I don't know.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah,
that's what I want this course is for. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's cool.
Go ahead.
I'm Jeremy. I'm also Navajo. And why I'm here is, I don't know, to hopefully become a civil engineer.
Okay.
Charlie Brown. Newfield from Alaska. Here to get a better grip on what exactly the different disciplines do.
Okay.
Find out what I want to do.
Okay. Go ahead, next.
I'm John David. I'm from Laguna as well.
Okay.
I'm looking to get into the civil engineering program.
Huh? What village?
Civil.
Oh, what? No, what village of Laguna?
Oh, Laguna.
Laguna, okay. I'm from Pawtucket.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
My name is Robert. I'm Lakota from South Dakota.
Okay.
This is a class to see what same as this place
works. Okay.
Engineering is
right. Great.
My name is Jameson Watchman. I'm from the Navajo tribe, and I'm from Arizona. And I'm in this course because I'm looking to see the difference between engineering and stuff.
Okay. Next.
My name is Mike John. I'm part of the Navajo Nation too. For this course, I'm here to go into career to engineering.
Okay.
I don't know what it means, but I'm looking towards civil.
All right. Next.
My name is Jason Martinez. I'm Navajo, and I'm just here to learn more about
engineering.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm Navajo. I came here to see what is out there for me.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm Gerald Cousis. I'm from Zuni Pueblo.
Okay.
I'm here for network management.
Ah, great.
Hi, my name is Justin Bradwell. I'm a Lakota from South Dakota. I'm here in the computer science / network management area. This is kind of just a filler class for me because they're not offering the class I need to graduate till next trimester, so get to know a little bit about engineering, I guess, well, before I get out of here.
Okay. Go ahead.
My name's Richard Abe. I'm Navajo. I'm taking an intro to engineering just to see what engineering was all about.
What it's all about.
Yeah.
Okay. And last but not least... Okay. Well, just to let you guys know that my wife's Navajo. She's from Wind Rock, so that gives you a little perspective that I connected some of you too. I want to ask one question of the class. Do you cover everything from civil, mechanical, electrical, chemical?
We touch on.
Okay, so it's just a
it's just a survey.
It's a survey course. Okay.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Okay. And it's very hands-on, so they work on their own projects. And also we have guest speakers like you.
Okay.
When they talk about their background.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me just tell you some about myself. I grew up in Laguna Pueblo. I went to the elementary school out there. Not long after elementary school, I went to school here in Albuquerque. And then, had my own struggles with going to school here in Albuquerque and went to St. Catherine's up in Santa Fe, which doesn't exist anymore, but a boarding high school. So kind of after elementary, I was... living with my uncles, with other family here in town, and then went to a boarding school, much like some of you here. You're away from home, and you learn how to cook and do laundry and things like that, and go to school at the same time. I finished high school up in Santa Fe, and during my high school time, I was introduced to a classmate of my mother who was in civil engineering. And he kind of, suggested that I look into that area as possible careers in college. And so when I was looking for a university, I ended up choosing Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas, because they were one of the few engineering programs that had a cooperative education opportunity. And so I actually ended up going from high school to Dallas, Texas before my freshman year and started working with a company, learning... what companies do, different jobs that there are, eventually got in, my freshman year, started taking classes in engineering, introductory classes in engineering. Hello. And so, I went to, again, Southern Methodist University, received my electrical engineering bachelor's degree, and it took me 6 years to get that, to let you know. Because the program that the university had was such that I went to school for a whole year, my freshman year, and then I worked full-time with IBM back then. That was in 1990. And I work for IBM today. And I'll tell you more about what I do as a job, or what I've done as a job within a big company like that. But going back to the university piece, go to school for a full year, freshman year, went to work full-time in the summer, went back to school in the fall for a whole semester, back to work full-time during the spring, back to school full-time during the summer. And if you keep following that progression, it'll take 6 years. And kind of like what you're running into right now, where you don't have the class that you need to graduate, well, guess what? I ran into that exact same problem.
Oh, yeah.
There was follow-on classes, or you get the book that spans two semesters, and because of my rotation... Yeah. I was not able to take certain classes, and of course, I had to catch up with it a little later.
Sure.
So, yes, it does. But if you knew going ahead, then maybe you could have planned better. But you didn't know, and a lot of us don't know. I mean, you're not given a manual on how to live your life, on what career to do. And I actually just want to write three things down. Let's see. That's okay. I'll get back to these three words a little later. So, 6 years. It took me 6 years to get my electrical engineering degree. Most people do it in 4 years. A lot of people I went to school did it in 4 years. But there was a handful of us that went through this cooperative education program, took 6 years, came out with 2 years of work experience. And during those 2 years, I was a software tester. I was a support person. What else did I do? I maintained computers and networking, kind of like what some of you are, you know, are doing here. You're learning about intranet networking. And so, I had my opportunity to touch some of those areas before finishing with an electrical engineering degree. And the way I kind of looked at it was, okay, I'm learning about stuff that's in computer engineering or computer software, and I'm getting an electrical engineering degree, so I'm kind of covering two areas. One, I'm getting practical work experience, and the other area, I'm actually learning from the books and, you know, all this stuff that you see in here. You guys actually have a lot of things to play with, a lot more than I had. You know, we had breadboards, but that's about it. None of this integrated circuits kind of stuff. So, the other thing I want to tell you, if you have any kind of question, anything's fair game. I'll answer it. Okay, any kind of question. You know, I want to be able to let you know that you do have a career in engineering. And that engineering is a field of knowledge, but it's not the only field of knowledge out there. There are other things you're going to need to know to get through life. That's kind of what goes to my first bullet up there about awareness. Being aware of what's out there or what the possibilities are or how to go find it is, I think, a big important piece of life. So, again, any questions, just raise your hand. I want this to be in as interactive as possible. Go ahead.
Dominic, IBM had a branch in Dallas. You were working for the IBM branch at Dallas?
That's correct. So, not far outside Dallas in Grapevine, Texas, they had a software lab there.
I see.
And it was a very big campus. This was back when IBM actually had a lot of people. There was two sites. Over 8,000 people worked there. And people worked in various jobs. And I actually saw, you know, a larger company go smaller. They would downsize, they laid people off, and a lot of the people that they kept were the very technical folks, the folks that could write software, that understood computers and things like that. And so I actually saw a site of 8,000 employees go down to 800. So, I mean, this was, again, early in the 90s when the company was struggling to figure out, you know, how it could make money in the world. That's really what it came down to.
I need to add that SMU is one of the top schools, good engineering school.
Well, it was a very good engineering school, and part of the reason I chose it was because my high school, St. Catherine's up in Santa Fe, which doesn't exist anymore, my graduating class was 32. So my graduating class was about as big as this room in high school. And one of the things that attracted me to that fact was that the engineering program had small class sizes. I mean, some of the introductory classes at probably UNM, if you were to go into any of the engineering first couple classes, are going to be what? 120, 120, 150? I mean, chemistry, physics is like that too.
They have lecture halls.
Right. So SMU, again, was one of the few things where I actually looked ahead and said, you know, class size is important. And my introductory classes were 30 people. You know, probably for my first 2 years. After that, it went down to about 15 because, you know, not everybody likes engineering. It's, you know, you learn math, you learn science, you learn how to apply things. So class size was very important for me.
That's the advantage that we have here at City.
Right.
Small class
sizes. You guys get a lot of hands-on, one-on-one time. So go ahead. Question.
What would you call those?
What would I call these? I think just kind of things that I've learned.
Things that you learned.
If I were to boil everything that I know down to a couple things that you can remember, that probably would be the things that I would want you to know. Because, you know, whether you go into engineering or not, you know, you're gonna try and figure out what is available in this world. What am I gonna do? How do I help people? Those kind of things. So.
Something ways to succeed or something?
Yeah, ways to succeed. Okay, so class size was very important. Like I said, went from about 30 down to 15 to maybe 10 in some of my, you know, graduation level classes. So, any questions about college? What's the actual program here? Do they bridge to UNM?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's a two plus two program.
Two plus two
they
program.
The first 2 years here, and they can transfer to any four-year school in New Mexico.
Okay.
We have agreements, and we have so far transferred about 12 students to a school in New Mexico.
Okay.
So it's basically the first 2 years of the four-year program.
Okay.
It's a general engineering program.
Okay. Well, let me go back a little bit and talk just about, you know, what I learned in, you know, college, learning engineering. I think the most important things I learned are how to think very critically. I mean, you take, like, some of the classes I took, you know, were a lot of math. So I don't know how far in math you guys get here, but we're talking like calculus, linear algebra, logic, of course, all the different calculuses, 1, 2, 3, differential equations. So engineers take a lot of math, and they take a lot of math because it takes a lot of math to explain things that happen in the real world. I mean, if you look at a river, just like the Rio Grande here, it's very complex, and engineers use mathematics to try and describe it. I mean, when you look at the river, it's flowing, but the water doesn't all flow at the same rate. If you were to take a cross-section of the river, you would see there's different parts, like in the middle of the river, which travel much faster than the edges, and there's, you know, various velocities in that group. I don't know if you've gotten to anything like that as far as teaching.
They do some in physics, that's right. Physics course.
But you use differential equations in calculus to try and help describe velocities and things like that. And the only reason I mention the river and I know that is because I also love fly fishing, and part of catching fish in a moving river is understanding currents and eddies and backflows. And so part of what I learned in engineering school helps me in something that I enjoy to do in my, you know, in my free time. Let's see. Any other questions about engineering? Okay, so again, it helped me think critically. I think one of the things that at least when I was in school, it's kind of like you think engineering's the whole world, okay? You're focusing on just this body of knowledge, and you're trying to learn it to apply it, you know, to have a career or at least have a life beyond college. And so I think one of the things that I learned after engineering school was the fact that there's other things that you need to know to live. I mean, all of us have bank accounts, most likely, and we deal with money, currencies, and so there's like finance, business, and I don't know how many of you are considering that, but engineering, at least in my opinion, gives you a very, very good foundation to have a career in engineering, but it also gives you a very good foundation to have careers in other areas, and I can talk about that as well. So I went to work for the employer that I started working with while I was in college. I went to work with IBM. I finished electrical engineering, and I actually got into software development. So I moved from Dallas, Texas to Raleigh, North Carolina. And let me back up a little bit. In high school, one of the computers that we had was a computer called an Apple, IBM PC Junior, and you guys probably don't know this, but it used to have a keyboard that had an infrared connection to the computer. Mm-hmm. So it was one of the at least when I was growing up, it was one of the first optical connections, wireless connections from a keyboard to a computer unit or, you know, PC chassis. And I thought that was so cool because I saw that probably in eighth grade. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, IBM, that's the company that made it. That's kind of like, okay, it would be kind of cool to be able to work and do that. Well, went to work in Dallas with IBM. Because of the downsizing, they also closed the lab, and they moved it somewhere else. And they made those folks, they basically said, okay, well, if you want to move somewhere else to do another job, you can. And it was one of those rare occasions where we probably had 200 managers from locations all over the United States go converge on one site, and basically it was like a big college interview. I interviewed with about 12 different managers within the company. This is not outside the company. And then of the, you know, of the 800 people that were left, you know, some stayed and did some type of job. Others went other places. I actually interviewed with 12 managers, and I narrowed it down to 3 jobs, one working with database software, one working with microelectronics, and actually designing silicon. Actually, it was a project where they were trying to do, when you ever get to it, it'll be, it was a project where they were trying to put on the same piece of silicon an x86 instruction set and a CISC instruction set on the same piece. Anyway, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Didn't work, but the market says what
was
things survive. Pardon?
Was it VLSI design? What,
yeah, it was VLSI design. It was VLSI design. Basically, putting 2 processors on the same single piece of silicon to do 2 different instruction sets. So, anyway, 3 jobs to choose from. I got to see each location: California, Vermont, and Raleigh, North Carolina. And the 3rd job was working for IBM's PC development group, consumer division. So this was my chance to actually work in the area of something that I saw, you know, years ago, and kind of had a goal. I thought it was cool. That would be cool to go do that. And I actually had the opportunity, because of business dynamics, to go do that. And I spent 6 years in Raleigh, North Carolina, after being in Dallas, working in IBM's consumer division. So we made computers for everybody, at least everybody in the United States and worldwide. So I got exposure to see how a product is developed and then sold internationally. And there's different roles. I mean, I worked in the telephony and computer internet connectivity area. And you'd be surprised. You cannot sell a phone in the United States and take that same phone and sell it in Spain, or take that same phone and sell it in Japan. Because there's, you know, there's standards, there's differences in how each company, you know, deals with their technology. So we had to do little changes to the product to go sell in those markets. And so I spent 6 years developing PCs. You know, back then, I don't know if you guys know about cable modems, you know, cable modems for internet access. Are you guys familiar with ADSL modems, asymmetric digital subscriber lines? No? Okay, well, they're very much like cable modems, except they go over the telephone company. The telephone company provides that internet access as opposed to the cable. I actually was working with embedding modems in PCs back in 1995. We were trying to come up with products that actually, you know, you could buy it and then connect it, your cable feed to it, and then you could have internet access. Didn't do very well, but you know, it's just one of those things that I was exposed early to because I was working in the consumer division. And so, again, it was the ability to work with new technologies, you know, trying to improve people's lives on how to bring those products to market. I think one of the most impressive things that I learned back then was, you're familiar with a one-way mirror, right? You can see through there to somebody else, but they can't see back. You see it in kind of like what the police shows and things like that. Well, part of developing consumer products is seeing how people behave with them. And so we had a situation where we set it up and we brought somebody who didn't know anything about a computer. Put them in a room, put them with a computer, told them, unbox it, hook it up, and we'll learn from watching you. I mean, they couldn't see us watching them, but we could watch them. They couldn't see us. And so, you know, you see this person open the box, and then they take out the cables, and, you know, you'll see several black cables, and, you know, they had a hard time figuring out what connector went to which. And nowadays, you see all the computers, what do? They have color coding in the back. Well, that was a result of some of the research that was done by computer companies back then. Was, you know, you had 5 different cables to connect to a box. You know, how do I know which one goes where? Well, if I put, you know, the connector and I make it purple, and I put a little label on the box that says purple, well, guess what? Purple and purple, unless you don't you can't see purple, you know, those two will go together. And the same thing, red and, you know, red, and you put the red connector. I mean, that was a result of kind of understanding. I mean, from an engineer's perspective, we knew how to make a computer, we knew how to make it run fast, but we didn't know how to easily help people set it up. And so part of the color coding that you see on computers today was a result of engineers actually letting non-engineers use it and figure out what goes on. And a lot of the products that companies make nowadays have customers, and depending on the skill set of the customers, that'll dictate on how they interact with the product. And companies need to make products easy to use. And you see that with products today. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Apple's, you know, iPod, iPhone. I mean, those are very, very elegant, and user-friendly devices. You know, compare that with probably, you know, another, if you want to compare it with another phone out there, you're talking about maybe Motorola's Android. And the Droid phone, I'm probably aware of that. Yeah, that it's a phone that's a little, not as easy to use, but you know, it's still, again, you know, you can learn it as a consumer, but there are certain things consumers should be catered to, and usability is definitely one of them. And that's kind of what I picked up in working in the consumer division in North Carolina. So, any questions? No questions up to now. Go ahead.
How many different states have you worked in?
We're through two now. And I worked in Arizona and then here, so we'll get through those as well. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so you work in Albuquerque, so their IBM is in Albuquerque too?
There's a small sales office in Albuquerque. And
that's kind of where you work?
Right.
Okay, so there isn't a big...
No.
Just looking at networking possibilities,
right,
when I get out of here and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know Intel is not the place to go anymore.
Oh, yeah? Well, we can have those discussions. And maybe we can talk about it now. I think one of the things that you, if you go into engineering school and you learn about engineering, you come out with a very technical background. And nowadays, because of the pervasiveness of the Internet, you can talk to people on the other side of the world like that. I mean, you know, most of you are probably on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. You know, I went traveling for work, and I met, you know, some folks in Australia, in Malaysia, Singapore, and guess what? They're on Facebook too. You know, you friend them, and you can actually see events in their lives, and they're on the other side of the world, you know, as an update, you know, a friend update. Yeah, you know, somebody has a new child, and you know about it. It's something that's very different than, you know, it was when I was your age. When I was your age, we were connecting computers using telephone lines. We'd have to actually call one computer to another and then exchange information. Now it's
using
it's very easy.
Cat 3.
It was before that. It was before that. Coaxial. Yeah, twisted pair wire.
Yeah, twisted
pair. Twisted pair wire phone wire. So, yeah. Yeah, bulletin board systems, you probably remember them, all that. That's getting dated now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Donnie, mm-hmm. I have a question. Does IBM still have a market share in PCs?
No.
They don't have any?
No market share in PCs whatsoever, consumer PCs.
Consumer PCs.
Well, actually, no PCs at all.
That's
now.
Right.
Now. Okay, so when I worked in Raleigh, North Carolina, I left because I wanted to be closer to New Mexico. And I said, you know what, I still want to work for the same company, and I want to do technical work, but I want to work closer to New Mexico, is where family is. You know, what are my options? And so I actually looked at jobs in Boulder, Colorado, because there were jobs up there. There were jobs in Tucson, Arizona. There was no engineering jobs in New Mexico. So, okay, you know, I interviewed for different kinds of jobs. I had to choose, and I actually ended up choosing a technical job in Tucson, Arizona. So, again, 6 years in Raleigh, North Carolina. I interviewed within the company for other positions and actually chose a job in Tucson, Arizona, and moved from... Actually, the company moved me back then. That's kind of rare now. The company moved me from North Carolina to Arizona. So I went from doing PC hardware and software development to doing storage work. And so everyone knows that a computer holds the data within, you know, within the computer, or, you know, even a phone, the data is held within a phone in solid state storage inside. And so I went to work at the location in IBM where that's kind of where they did all the storage stuff. They did disk and they did tape. And they also did software that did, you know, that interfaced with a lot of the disk and the tape. So, 6 years in North Carolina, and then I spent 6 years in Tucson, and I kind of hopped around there. I started off in doing backup software. I went with a group that does backup software. I mean, this is enterprise level, so we're talking about thousands and thousands of computers that you're backing up data from so that you don't lose it. And then I worked in that area. I also worked in the another area. It was in tape libraries. So you see some of the robotics that you have in here. Well, some of the robotics that you see are in tape libraries to take a tape cartridge out of the library and put it into the drive so that people can back up data to it and then take the tape out of the drive and put it back into the library. So there's robotics involved in that. There's software. There's microcode. You guys understand what microcode is? Okay. So basically, you know, instructions embedded into the device. And not long after that, actually, I ported, the team that I was working on was trying to port software on from one operating system to Linux back then. And
server?
Yeah, there was a server inside the device.
Yeah.
And so we were taking, you know, back then it was OS2 based operating system to Linux based. And of course, you know, we're different operating systems, different data types. And so we're taking that software from one to the other. I did that for a couple years. And then lastly, I moved into the high enterprise storage teams. And so that team, we made big refrigerator-sized boxes full of disks, you know, hard drives. Well, you can take a bunch of hard drives and put them in a big box and then organize them and put computers in them as well. And take them and organize the information in a way that you can give another computer a large amount of storage than you could ever put inside the box itself. So, like, you know, the desktop here has a drive inside it, and it may be able to hold, what, 100 gigabytes now, even up to a terabyte today. I don't know. Do you guys understand some of the sizes of storage? Okay.
1,012 megabytes.
Well, I mean, if you think back to
1024.
Right.
1024.
That's because you're counting in binary.
Yeah.
So, going back to my consumer experience, when we sold computers to individuals back then, we had maybe 500 megabyte drives. I mean, this was like in 91, 92, and now we have computers that have a terabyte drive inside them. I mean, I have terabyte drives at home to back up my data for some of the things that I do now. But I worked in the storage area. Again, you're taking a bunch of these drives and putting them in a box and connecting them and organizing them in ways where you don't lose data. So if you take, let's say, five different drives and you have a file, you can break that file up into on five different disks, and then you use a calculation to basically say, okay, if I lose one of the disks, I could replace the disk and recover the data.
It'd be a fragmented file.
Based on math. Yeah. Yeah, fragmented file.
Basically fragmented file. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm in Tucson. I hopped around a little bit. I ended up in the storage area, and it kind of hit me that IBM has always been getting smaller and smaller. And the reason for that is because it's an international company. They have employees in India. IBM has employees in China. They have employees in Mexico. And the cost of labor, when you're talking on the business side, is much less than it is in the United States. So I could code up a software program, and it takes me 8 hours. And of course, it costs the company to pay me 8 hours worth of time. Let's say that's $200. Another individual with my skill set from Mexico could code up that same program in the same amount of time and cost the company, what did I say, $800, $400? So even half as much. And guess what? The internet's available, and you know that software file can easily be transferred to where it needs to be compiled and produced into a product. So that's what's happening today, is the
outsourcing,
right sourcing, whatever sourcing they call it. It's a business decision to try and reduce expense. Business decision to try and reduce cost. And so because the internet is very pervasive and people are connected now, you can talk to somebody in China, you can talk to somebody in India. Guess what? The jobs that can be done, that can move bits from one location to the other, will be done in the places that cost less, as long as there are smart technical people to do that. Now, there are other things beyond that, like project management and coordination and advertising and marketing and things like that that go beyond the product. And I became very aware of that, especially when I worked in the consumer area making PCs. And one of the things that was available to me was to get get another degree at my time expense. And of course, the company paid for it back then. And so I went to go get a business degree. So because I was in Tucson, I actually went and enrolled at the University of Arizona there and went to go get a business master's degree. So not only am I technical, but now I have knowledge of how business works. Not only business works in the United States, but internationally. And now I understand why they were trying to get people in Mexico to do the same work that was done here. And that'll change. It'll change over time. I think it depends a lot on people's standard of living. I mean, you guys take it for granted that we have air conditioning and that we have refrigeration, that we have power. I mean, there are parts of the world that don't have that, but they are getting it. And when they do get it, they'll be like us. And guess what? They may be educated as well, too. And if they're doing jobs that, we used to do, let's say years ago, who knows? They may be in the same situation where jobs leave their country. I mean, that's certainly possible. I mean, maybe not in our lifetimes, but it's the dynamics of how things happen in the world. And if you really think about it, you go back to engineering, you learn about how to try and describe complex things. And you have the math and the science in the background to try and understand not only technical stuff, but another area of knowledge that I found very intriguing is economics. You're trying to explain human behavior. Granted, it's not like a electron that moves from state to state, but it's a human or groups of humans and their behavior and interactions that cause big effects. So again, another area of knowledge that I chose was economics. I've been kind of a hobby economics kind of person, just understanding, why do people do what they do? Why do businesses do what they do? There's reasons, and there may be business reasons for that, or there may be human reasons for it too. So let me see. Any questions? This is kind of, yeah, go ahead.
Out of all that you've taken, what have you actually used?
What have I actually used?
Yeah.
All of it.
I think the one area that I have probably used it to understand another area is finance. Because you learn about time value of money. A dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. You learn, all of that's math, but if you come from a background that is very math oriented, it's easy to jump into a different area. So finance, understanding mortgages, understanding derivatives and securities and complex packaging of synthetic derivatives that actually caused some of the trouble that in the banking industry that you guys have probably seen in the last couple of years. But as an engineer, I can go understand that. I have the foundation to go understand that much more easier than somebody that has a business degree. Or probably somebody else that has computer science, social sciences, yeah. So I'm just kind of emphasizing to you that if you do go into engineering, it will be rigorous, it will be it will be testy. That I did have a hard times in the electromagnetic classes because of the math. we called it EMAG, I don't know what they call it now, but you know, but again, it gave me the foundation to go learn something. I don't use, you know, differential equations on a daily basis. I don't use calculus on a daily basis. But guess what? My sister's learning algebra, and I'm teaching her. You know, she comes to me and is like, okay. It took me a little while, but I actually, you know, remember how to do some of that stuff. So Tucson is where I moved from. I moved to Albuquerque in December, but when I finished my master's degree in business, again, it goes back to number one, awareness. Because I went through that effort, it made me aware of other opportunities. And it also made me aware that there are very technical people in the sales force. Something I didn't know about before. Very technical people in the sales force. And what these technical people do is they take the product that comes out of development and the documentation that comes out and any of the other things that development produces, and we understand it. And so I'm in sales now. I moved out of development, product development. Now I'm in sales. I'm one of these technical people that takes all this product information and I try and change the information such that a non-technical person can understand it. Because we have salespeople that are non-technical. They need to understand products. They need to understand new products quickly so that they can sell them to their customers. Or, as I like to think, that they can help their customers solve a problem. And that's really what, you know, we interact a lot with is, I have a problem, I go to somebody else to try and help solve it. And so, finishing the business degree, I became aware of, you know, different jobs that were technical, but also, you know, had a different skill set. You know, I'm talking to you today because, you know, I like to present. I'm comfortable presenting. That's a skill that I did not have when I came out of engineering school. Engineering school, you're very, you know, very, I think, fenced, and you focus on what you want to do, but interacting in a business situation is not a skill set you learn in business school, in engineering school. You learn it in business school, but you actually really learn it interacting with people. Go ahead.
We are changing that, though. We have partners that they do project management.
Okay, that's good.
They do communications.
Right.
Presentations.
Mm-hmm.
They need to do a budget analysis, what they need. So you are right, but it's changing because we need to give them those skills that
right.
is very important when you get into the outside world, the real world.
Right.
You need to have those skills.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I learned those skills because, you know, I explored different areas. I explored business. You know, out of my hobbies, you know, I explored fly fishing, and there's a group of people in that, and you know, they learn in their own ways. And then, you know, economics and all the people that I've run into in the economics areas. So, finished business school, got out of product development, went into sales. Now, the other reason I did that was because I wanted to work on some of the soft skills, and when I say soft skills, it's interacting with people. Because interacting with people is not a job that you can move to another country. When you interact with people, you know, you're trying to solve somebody's problem, but you know, they're in your you know, local city, local state, and you travel there and try and solve their problem. And that's a kind of job that can't move. I mean, and so what I do today is I teach. So there's two things I do. Number one, I learn about all the technical product information, and then I synthesize that so that non-technical people can understand it. That's one job. Another job I do is, well, it's all part of the same job, but another thing I do is I keep the sales force out of trouble. Okay, so you have this group of people in the company, in IBM, and they work with another company, so there's two groups of people, and they try and solve a problem. And so the group that's doing the selling comes up with a solution. And that solution is usually comprised of different parts. You know, in my case, it's storage, maybe servers, it may be switches, internet connectivity, things like that. So before this solution gets sold to this customer, we have what we call a solution review. And I know very, you know, I know very deep about one of the products in the solution. And so, you know, we have a big phone call. Everybody gets on the phone where we can hear one another, and we get all the documentation shared among everybody, and we look at the solution, and we go through all the different parts, and then we try and figure out, what's the solution trying to meet? What problem is it trying to solve, or what need is it trying to meet? And I look and I see, are they using this product the way that it's intended? Or are they telling the customer, oh, you can do this with it, when they really can't, technically. I mean, it's impossible to do what they told the customer by what the product does. And so I tell the sales team, I'm like, if you're telling them it's going to do this, it doesn't do that. So you better fix it somehow. And so, yeah, technical sales engineer. I'm a sales engineer. So I'll connect to this team, review what they have, give my opinion of it. I'll disconnect and I'll go talk to another separate sales team, read all their information to their solution that goes to another customer, and then I kind of weigh in on that. So I do that. I keep them out of trouble. That's really kind of what it comes down to. And then the last thing I do is I teach somewhere once a month. So I'll leave on a Monday, go to Chicago, go teach for a couple days, and come back on Friday. And I teach in-depth details about the products I know. So
that's within the company.
I teach external customers. So it's a customer facing role, and you'll find that a lot of the customer facing roles and jobs cannot be exported out of the country. I mean, because you're doing things here because it's interaction with people. So let's see. So these three things. Awareness. I think this is very important. Try new things. Try different things just so that you're aware of what the possibilities are. Before my world was engineering and product development, until I went to go, to business school or even interact in areas where there were customers, I learned that there was a technical job that I could do outside development. And what that technical job enabled me to do, because I can do, all I really need is a phone and an internet connection now to do my work. Those two things, well, a computer. I need a laptop. But because if I have that at a minimum, I can work anywhere. And guess what? I moved from Tucson to Albuquerque in December because I want to be closer to home, Laguna Pueblo. I want my boys and my family to grow up with the native culture that is here in New Mexico. I don't know how many of you know about the feast days here. All the Pueblo feast days.
Aren't you guys at home this week?
Not this week, but it's September.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Do you know? Yes, you know about all the feast. You go to the feast days. Okay, well, if you move out of New Mexico or away from away from Albuquerque, those don't exist anywhere. So it's something unique here. And something that I want to reconnect with, so...
So you reside in Laguna?
No, I actually live with my sister right now until we can find a house.
So you will be residing in Albuquerque?
I primarily reside in Albuquerque because I need a high-speed internet line. I need, probably at a minimum 4 megabits down, and I got to go maybe 1 or 2 up. I cannot get that out in Laguna.
BPS or?
Huh? It's bits per second.
Yeah.
Bits per second. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, you got to convert that to megabyte, bytes per second. Well, I'll tell you. I mean, that exact thing that you guys do, I use every day, almost every day. Because one of the products that I work with does replication. So I take data from one location, and I'm replicating it to another location. And guess what? The products don't have the ability, don't have the connectivity, but the customer has to buy the connectivity from a telephone company or a data service provider or somebody, and they get a certain speed line. So let's say it's an OC3, what's that, 155 megabits per second. I think that's what it is. I have a little cheat sheet on my desk so that I don't need to know all that. but the other thing about being an engineer, if you don't know the data, you can go find it. Go find it somewhere. And the beauty about having the internet and having connected devices is you can access that information anytime. I don't know if you let folks use know, devices in class,
no,
but
right here,
yeah, no, but you have computers. I mean, that's something I didn't have access to, you know, when I was growing up, and you when you were growing up. Access to information today is so easy. I mean, finding it is the problem. Access is easy, and so going back to what I kind of what I do, you know, your bits per second to bytes per second,
yeah,
you know. OC43 line, 155 megabits. Okay, let's just say 150 megabits per second. Well, if I have files, I know they're in megabytes. Well, if I have to transfer, you know, 100 megabytes, you know, from one location to the other, how long is it going to take me? If I have a 150 megabit line.
10-15 minutes.
What is it?
I don't know, I
gotta look at
my file.
Okay, so 150 megabit line.
Yep, to bytes.
To bytes. Divide by 10, because it's easy.
Yeah.
Don't divide by 8, because there's protocol overhead and there's other technical things. So divide by 10, so that's what? 15 bytes per second. 15 bytes per second, let's just say bytes. So, okay,
yeah,
we'll make it. So if you add 100 bytes to get across, how long would it take?
100 bytes to get across 15 mm-hmm. megabytes per second.
Right. 100 divided 15, by 15.
Yeah, 100 divided by 15.
Six.
Be,
yeah, six. 6 seconds.
6 seconds.
6 seconds. That's what I do every day. Oh, yeah, well, that's one of the jobs that I do every day is I take a look at what this company is trying to do is trying to take, now, but I talk in terabytes and petabytes. One location to the other. And, of course, in any kind of solution, taking data from one place to the other, the most expensive part is the pipe. By far, the most expensive part is actually the actual pipe. And I don't know if you guys have gotten
like
into
fiber optics.
Okay.
Fiber.
Yeah, fiber optics, single mode, multi-mode. Yeah, I learned that in I learned that in engineering school. You know how the light bounces all along the wave, or it could be different colors, or you know things like that. So, but that's probably one practical example of you know an engineering thing that I learned long ago that I use almost every day, is helping companies figure out how do I get data from one place to the other. Not only do I get it from one place to the other, what does it cost? What does it cost, and how can I reduce that so that I can reduce costs? And it depends on the company. If it's financial, there may be regulatory rules for what they have to do. If it's healthcare oriented, well, of course, there's other you know security regulations around healthcare information. If it's just a you know a company that makes products that is not really regulated, they may have more flexibility to say, okay, well, you know, we really don't want to spend $50,000 a month on this pipe, because that's the reality, is some of these pipes are really expensive. I don't want to spend $50,000 a month. $50,000 a month is a lot of money. Okay, well, we can go to a smaller pipe that's only $10,000 a month, but it's going to take you 3 more days to replicate your data. Lower cost, more time. So,
are you talking about like not the actual fiber optic cable, but you're talking about the pipe that holds the cable? That's what's the most expensive part.
It's the connection. It's the connection.
Oh, okay.
So it's the use of the fiber optic cable.
I was like,
It's the use of the fiber optic cable.
Yeah.
So, again, awareness. What other jobs? Curiosity. I think for me personally, I've been curious about certain things in my life, whether it's fishing or economics or. I think engineers have just a natural curiosity. And I'm telling you, you can develop that curiosity in a technical area and then dovetail that, use it in other areas. And then persistence. I read a book recently called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. And in the book, it basically says that Tiger Woods is a very good golfer, not because of his talent, but because of his practice. He's had, well, there's also kind of luck and opportunities had a big role in it. But if you ever get the chance to read that book, it's pretty interesting in the sense that as you develop skill, and it can be in anything, as you develop skill, if you want to become the best at whatever that skill is, you have to put a minimum of 10,000 hours into it. 10,000 hours. Probably can't fathom that. Let's break it down. 10,000 hours is 10 years. So that's 1,000 hours a year. 365 days a year into 1,000 is what? Roughly.
So 3 hours a day.
3 hours a day.
3 hours a day.
3 hours a day, yeah. 7 days a week. 365 days a year.
Ten years.
For 10 years. If you want to become an expert in anything, Yo-Yo Ma plays the cello. He's an expert in the cello because guess what? He probably put 10,000 hours into practicing. If you want to become the best race car driver, guess what you probably have to do? If you're, you know, if you want to be a NASCAR driver, they probably put a minimum of 10,000 hours into what they do. So if you want to become an expert in anything, you look at these rock stars. These guys that can play guitar, I don't know if you guys play Rock Band or anything like that. But you know, you look at these entertainers that play the musical instruments. I mean, they got to where they got because they put, at a minimum, probably 10,000 hours into it. 3 hours a day, every day. What do you do 3 hours a day, every day, besides sleep?
You're supposed to study, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, he wants you to study. He wants you to study. So yeah, last thing, persistence. Just to realize that things don't come easy, you know. What I do in my day job is a result of probably a lot of what I did in the past, of what I studied in engineering, of the skills I developed in engineering, you know, becoming aware of other things and learning about those, becoming curious about finance, about understanding how time value of money works, how, you know, you can take a group of mortgages and divvy them up and sell them to a bunch of other people and, you know, complex things like that. Engineering gives you a great platform to understand the world, I think. At least, that's been my experience. And I think with the engineering and the business, you know, I'm doing a technical sales job now, but guess what? Because with the business degree, I could go hop into operations and help a company produce products. You know, I could become a consultant on the telecommunication side to help, you know, companies do this or that. I guess the other thing too is that, you know, it's given me a very diverse skill set that I can, you know, move to different areas. If I wanted to do just, you know, installing computers and networking them, whether it's wired or wireless, you know, I have the skill set to understand that and do it in a very short amount of time. Somebody who doesn't understand that tries to get into it, is going to have a longer learning curve. And I don't know what your experiences have been with, you know, having an engineering background.
Yeah, that's exactly. See, the first chapter of this book that we were studying a couple of weeks ago, there was a definition for engineers, mm-hmm. engineers. And it was, I liked it. It just says, using science and economy. Science
and economy,
math and economy to solve problems that serves people.
Right.
So you told about all these components. You mentioned math, science, economy. And also you mentioned that customer service,
mm-hmm.
working with the customers and right. sales engineer. So this all comes into the definition of an engineer.
Right.
Their job does not end with the drafting board.
Exactly.
They need to go with the mm-hmm. product all the way to the consumer.
Right.
So because that's the purpose of engineering, problem solving mm-hmm. for people.
Right.
To serve people for right. the benefits of the society.
Right, right, right. Actually, there's I think some things that are changing, you know, in the product development areas. Who has a Twitter account? Who has a Facebook account?
Facebook,
okay. Well, you know when you have trouble with something and you kind of rant on there? You say, oh, you know, I had, you know, this thing broke today. Well, before Facebook, Twitter, these social media environments, companies had no clue how to cater their products. And I think you're reaching a point in time today where there's a big fundamental shift. Customers are going to dictate what companies do.
Real time.
Real time. Near real time.
Near real time.
I don't know if you've had this discussion, but but nowadays, because people, it's so easy for everyone to talk to one another. If a company produces a bad product, guess what? Everybody knows about it. You know, if a company lies to a customer, guess what? Everybody knows about it. If you're on the internet and you have the ability to be able to tap into that vast amount of information, you can find out real quickly that, hey, guess what? This phone really sucks because all these other people say it does. And guess what? The sales of that phone will just stop. Mm-hmm. And if that company does not react, mm-hmm. it's going to go away. The company's going to go away. So yeah, it's an interesting time now with all the connectedness that people have. Customers are going to dictate what companies do. Sure. And it all, again, depends on the internet, the connectedness, and that, you know, who created that? Engineers.
That's right. And something that I'd like to add to them, I'm sure your engineering education gave you an edge when you went to the business school.
Yes.
This is something that I always like to convey to my students. Law schools, the schools, they prefer students with an engineering background.
Yeah.
When you apply to law school, because they seem that they learn the problem solving. They have the logical thinking, uh-huh. problem-solving skills. That is good for law school, studying law, legal cases, mm-hmm. and also going to business school. And there is a program at the University of New Mexico. They call it a 3+2 program. So you study the engineering degree, you study 3 years of engineering, and then 2 years at the Anderson School, the School of Anderson, where they offer
business school,
MBAs. Mm-hmm. So you end up with a bachelor's degree in engineering and a master in business. And that's also something that you might want to consider. They call it 3+2. So in 5 years, you have a bachelor's degree in engineering, a degree in the area that you like, plus a master's degree in business. And usually people like that they have a technical background into business, they have a good edge, just like you. When it comes to as a sales engineer.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. My cohort in business school was 22, 25, and there was only like 3 engineers in the class, and I did not have a problem finding a partner to work with because people wanted to work with me just because they knew, you know, I had the technical background to understand a lot of what the case studies were, analyzing numbers, statistics, you know, all these other things to, you know, what's a regression test? You know, how do you coordinate, you know, find out what trends are? I mean, but being an engineer, I didn't have a problem finding people to partner with to, you know, to go through problems and case studies and things like that. So
it's something that I like to, we have a few minutes left. Our students have a lot of opportunities to go as internships, for summer internships.
Do it.
Companies.
Do it.
And I think, and I see you did it when you were going to school.
Yes.
Can you just briefly tell me that was the main, I think, main part that actually pushed you into your education and your professional life? Is that right? The experience that you had while you were a student?
Yes. I mean, you had to balance work and school. And, of course, engineering students, for the most part, end up taking 16 hours of class. I mean, in my case, it was work full-time, school full-time, so I'd never had to really balance. I did work a little bit part-time when I was in school, but it did give me perspective. I learned things that I didn't really see in the job, but then I moved on to a different job that I started using a little bit, mm-hmm. and then I moved on to a different job. So, it goes back to awareness. Mm-hmm. I was able to do things that gave me, you know, customer service experience, that gave me testing, software testing experience, hardware testing experience, you know, different experiences within product development. And then when I actually moved out of product development, you know, there's all kinds of other things.
Just for your information, I posted new opportunities, internship opportunities this summer, for the summer. Mm-hmm. Just today, I asked Christina to post new opportunities in Puerto Rico on renewable energies, on environmental technology. So check with Christina and Laura. If you're interested, there are some positions specifically for Native Americans. Those are programs for Native Americans. And I want you to check those out. Check the bulletin board here and also talk to Christina about those opportunities because some of them have deadlines. Okay? And according to him, he said, do it. Do it because this is a great experience mm-hmm. when you are a student. These opportunities are available. Are there any questions from our speaker?
Any questions? Anything? Anything?
I'm retiring.
What's that? Do I plan on retiring? I think, again, going back to the awareness piece, I've become aware well enough about business that true wealth is created when you own your own business. And so that's the direction I'm heading. I mean, if you can own your own business, have a product or service that brings, you know, a revenue stream in, and you keep costs low, and you're able to save the money within the business and increase the value of the business, I mean, you own it. And guess what? A business is portable. You can sell it to somebody else. And you see some of these, people in California, Silicon Valley, they created businesses, and they've sold them off for millions and even billions of dollars.
And you can do it because you have the education, you have experience working mm-hmm. with the corporate America.
Right.
Now you are ready to start mm-hmm. it all.
So that's what my retirement's going to be. I mean, I do save money, and you know, I put it in stocks and bonds and things like mm-hmm. that. From a retirement perspective, it's a pool of money that I do save. And again, finance really helps understand that. And guess what? I learned finance because of engineering too. So, go ahead. Another question.
Question.
You know, one of the things facing a lot of tribes today is economic sustainability. Mm-hmm. I guess one of the things I'd like to get into is something that would help that. And do you think that an engineering field is something that can...
Yes.
I guess as a tool to help tribes with that.
The reason I would say engineering can directly help that is because, number one, internet connectivity among tribes is lacking. When they can get high-speed internet connectivity, they will be able to participate in economies and markets that they cannot today from the reservation. Not only that, but a engineering-based knowledge would also help in the sense that you can educate others in those communities. I mean, I plan on going back to Laguna and doing what I can to try and inspire middle school students to go into engineering or even consider it, because there've been studies that shown if you introduce a lot of technical stuff to eighth graders, that they tend to go in those directions. They become influenced.
It has to be early on. Mm-hmm. That's right. It has to be early on.
Right, early enough. I mean, you guys are doing it here, and that's great. But from an economic development, you're always going to need technical people. The reason why is, guess what? If somebody comes along to sell you a box and it tells you it does this, who's going to know whether it does it or not? An engineer can say, okay, well, what does it look like inside? I see power coming in. Mm-hmm. I see it connecting to these three things. And it blinks lights, but guess what? It's not doing what they said it would do. And the tribe is what? $20,000 less. So I think technical people are a necessity to just keep people honest. Really. I mean, when I look at what, I don't do service on my car anymore, but when I do take it in, I ask for the parts back because I want to see what they replaced. I mean, I have enough mechanical background to understand, okay, well, we're dealing with a repair on the wheel. We're talking about a strut, a shock, springs, things, bushings. If I get those parts back, I know that they actually fixed what I asked them to. And so from a technical perspective, you have the ability to really see what people do and understand it.
So you think high speed connectivity is one thing that
it has to be. It has to be. And then it has to get there.
If you need, then you need power also, right? Solar energy, mm-hmm. renewable energies for remote areas,
right.
that they mm-hmm. can bring the power and bring the connectivity.
Right.
And then the physical space is no problem. You mm-hmm. can be wherever you want
right.
because of the connectivity.
So yeah, I actually bought my mom a satellite modem so I can work from her house, mm-hmm. but that's all I can do is work from her. I can do email mm-hmm. and I can do text, instant messaging. But that's about it. Mm-hmm. A lot of what I do also is part of when I develop, like I have the video camera back there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of you noticed, but the one reason I'm doing this is because my boys are small. I don't know if I'm going to be around forever, and I'd like them to be able to view this and learn. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that we're moving into an age where we learn by interacting with one another. We learn through video. We learn through audio. You guys have MP3 files, right, with your music. Guess what? You could listen to people talk, groups of people talk. They could have talked 10 years ago, but you're learning from them 10 years ago. this whole idea of time shifted learning.
Digital history.
Yeah, digital history, time shifted learning. If I can learn something, I can capture it. Other people can learn at their own time, at their own location, their own place, and I don't have to talk to them. They don't have to talk to me. Mm-hmm. Now, if they have a question, they can connect with me, and I can help answer it. But we're living in an area now where you don't have to have the professor here to learn. Mm-hmm. You can watch a video of him, and you can learn. Granted, it may not be as interactive, but it's a way to do it. It's a way to learn. And
they're putting you out of work.
Yeah, we're putting you out of work. That's right. We're putting you out of work. Yeah, video on demand is a big thing, and you need the connectivity for that.
Yeah. Are there any questions? From
I'm surprised someone? No one asked me the most important question.
Sometimes they have questions.
What them. Is it? How much you get paid?
There you go. That's what I get. Okay. So last year I made more money than I did this year. So okay, let me back up. When I was let me give you some perspective. I was a technical person. I was in development, product development. I got paid fairly well. I got paid, let's say, let me see what was my last paycheck out of development. I was paid $75,000 a year as a developer. I moved into sales. Guess what? If I help these teams make money, I get money.
You get commission.
Yeah. So I went from $75,000 to $90,000 in a year because I help people sell products. So I made more last year than I did this year because of the economy, and I currently stand at $92,000 a year.
Almost six figures.
Working from home. And they pay for my...
That's five figures.
Yeah. Yes. Close to six
figures.
Question.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's pretty good.
If the sales forces do well, I get paid more. So
yeah, we hope that
you look young, so you got time.
I mean, we hope that we have you in future also. Maybe
well, I mean, I'm
local. Other functions and other.
I'm local,
activities.
So yeah, I'm local now. I plan on being in Albuquerque because of my boys. So.
That's great. And let us know if there are any opportunities for our students, internships or
sure.
jobs. That would be great.
Yeah.
Let's thank you, Dominic, for
this. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. See you on Tuesday. Oh.